Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Hello friends, how are you? I hope you're feeling good. I hope you're in good health and secure. It's good to see you. This is one of my favorite chapters, maybe my favorite chapter of the Lotus Sutra. This is the chapter where I feel closest. It's between this one and the Tathagata's lifespan. But this one, particularly, makes me feel really, really close to Nichiren. And so I want you to pay special attention, and no doubt I won't keep myself from elucidating in my own experience. Picture Nichiren reading this. Maybe the first time, maybe the 50th time. And saying and seeing in his mind, this is the physicality, this is the samsaric representation. The closest thing he can come to, Shakyamuni that is, to demonstrating what he was trying to teach in the Avatamsaka Sutra. In the Avatamsaka Sutra, the Kigan in Japanese, or the flower garland, the first oration that Siddhartha Gautama gave as Shakyamuni to his disciples after he'd attained enlightenment, right? That whole book, and it's a big one, is about the experience of Buddhahood. And of course, nobody was prepared to hear it. Nobody even understood what he was trying to say. But now, after some 42 years of preparing people to hear it, in the 11th chapter, in the middle of the Lotus Sutra, he does it again, but this time with all the benefit of the teachings he's offered for so long, using the rhetoric that everyone has had to learn and accept. He's now going to paint a picture again, but now they're prepared to hear this picture and understand the metaphor, the skillful means. I mean, how do you describe a mental function without just referring to what it looks like, feels like, smells like? Because our skandhas run our samsaric experience. But you don't want to talk about samsaric experience. You want to talk about the Buddha experience. How do you do that with samsaric language? No small feat. So I want you to think about that, and that Nichiren thinking about it, thinking, I can create an object, a samsaric object, which is what Shakyamuni was trying to do with words. And I can create that perfect mirror, reflector of what Shakyamuni is discussing in this chapter. That would facilitate our penetration, our penetration into our Gohonzon mind. That would be the greatest objective, is to instantiate Buddha. That's what we're trying to do. So what if we had a samsaric door to go through? Wouldn't that make it easier? Especially in our age and time. Oh my goodness. Everything, right? We talk about politics, what do they call it? The politic today, whether it's in government or in day-to-day life, the politic in Twitter or X or whatever it's called today, or Facecrack. I mean, Facebook, I hate that app. Personality politics, right? The persona of personalities, of persona, personality, politics of personalities, right? What the heck do they call it today? Why can't I come up with that word today? Anyway, you know what I mean, right? Everything's about identity. Identity politics, finally. Thank you, brain. It was in there, roaming around in all that empty space. And I mean that. Okay. So the appearance of a jeweled stupa. In some translations, the apparition of the jeweled stupa. Right off the bat, so I can read through this without taking too many pauses, one theme that comes up here that also comes up in the Bodhisattvas of the Earth, and you've heard me talk about it many times, when something in Buddhist rhetoric, in these sutras, when something comes from under the earth, that's a device, a skillful means of explaining future, right? It was mostly an agrarian society, and also, you know, a lot of animals taken care of. Very vegetarian, as you know, Indian continent, yes? So everything is about growth and coming forth, right? The seeds of Buddhahood coming forth from under the earth. The lotus flower coming from a muddy bog, creating this amazing beauty, instantaneously spreading its seeds, right? There's a lot of analogies in Buddhism about growing. And it uses that as an analogy for time, right? That's an important point. So here we go. At that time, there appeared before the Buddha a seven-jeweled stupa. I have to stop right away because you notice this seven-jeweled stupa, the stupa, the place of honoring and revering our work, our effort to Buddhahood, right? It appeared before the Buddha, not behind him, not to his side, before him. It replaces Buddha with Buddha-ness. It's very important to notice that, because Buddha, still to this point, and still today by many who, anyway, is seen as a man. He is Buddha, right? It refers constantly this way. Rather than, the fact is, Buddha is a state of being. Yes, Shakyamuni is a man, but he is being in Buddha. So this stupa comes up before him because why? Because what does it represent? Think Nichiren now. This stupa represents Buddha-ness, irrespective of a samsaric representative. It now is the samsaric representative. It is the physical form of universal Buddha-ness. Oh my goodness, if you don't hear Gohonzon in this, right? This is amazing. This chapter blows me away. I feel like I'm in Nichiren's own mind going, oh, crap. Look at this, right? No wonder he was inspired to create that mandala. Not to replace the jeweled stupa, but the teaching of this chapter, the way that Shakyamuni Buddha backed off from being Shakyamuni to transcend samsara for the good of all of those who practice for their Buddha-ness. And first sentence. At that time, there appeared before the Buddha a seven-jeweled stupa, 500 yohanas in heights and 250 yohana in both length and width, which emerged from the ground and hovered in the air. Always we enshrine our mandala above our heads, right? And we look up at it. And the bottom characters of kyo are much larger than the top characters of namu, because we're looking up at it. It was adorned with various jewels, had 5,000 railings and 1,000 myriad of chambers. That's our Butsudan. That's the stupa. It was decorated with innumerable flags and banners and hanging jeweled necklaces, and myriad of kodas of jeweled bells hung from the top. The fragrance of tamala leaves and sandalwood trees exuded from all sides of the stupa, covering the world. What is world, a skillful word used to mean, right? The 3,000 realms or worlds, the 10 realms or worlds. They're all existence. They are the cosmos. They are the engine of life. The quiescent energy through formations becomes form. Here is the door. Here is the energy of formation into Buddhahood. Not a thing, but an experience. This is the transitory space, the transmigratory space, mental space. It's all, The banners and umbrellas were composed of 7 jewels, such as gold, silver, lapis lazuli, mother of pearl, agate, pearl, and ruby. And they rose as high as the palaces of the world protectors of the 4 quarters. So now he's reaching out to all the mythology that everyone's familiar with to indicate the massive importance and inclusion of this universal Buddha-ness. That's the first paragraph. The 33 devas rained down heavenly Mandarava flowers in homage to the jewel stupa. The other 1,000 of myriads of kodas of humans and such non-humans as devas, nagas, yakshas, Gandharvas, Asuras, Garudas, Kimnaras, and Mahoragas also respected, honored, revered, and praised the precious stupa by offering all kinds of flowers, perfumes, necklace, flags, banners, music, right? Water, incense, plants. This is what we're doing when we do gongyo, when we chant. Then a tremendous voice issued forth in praise from the jeweled stupa. Our reflection, the Buddha-ness, speaking to us through this Gohonzon mind, right? This apparition, this jewel to this stupa sends into our mind this awakening. It speaks to us. That's the objective of our practice, to open this door to speak Buddha-ness to us. This is the Gohonzon, our mind. The reflection is the voice, right? We talk about the voice is the Buddha. This is why we chant. Look at the circle we make. Right back at us. Saying, splendid, splendid, O Shakyamuni, the Bhagavat teaches the Lotus Sutra to the great assembly, the instruction for bodhisattvas and treasured lore of the Buddhas, which is the wisdom attainable by every sentient being. Do we need to say it again? Just so, O Shakyamuni, Bhagavat, what you teach is true. Here it is in action, right? Thereupon, the fourfold assembly saw the great jeweled stupa hovering in the air. And so should you be in your mind whenever you're in front of your Butsudan, yeah? And also heard the voice that issued forth from the stupa. They all were pleased, I hope so, with the teaching and marveled, okay, at this unprecedented experience. Of course, when you first trigger your Buddha-ness, How could it be anything else but unprecedented? They stood up from their seats, honored Shakyamuni with their palms pressed together, and withdrew to one side. Like, let's make way for Buddhaness, yes? At that time, there was a Bodhisattva Mahasattva called Mahapratibhana, who realized that the Devas, humans, and Asuras of the world were puzzled, addressing Buddha, saying, O Bhagavat, why has this jeweled stupa emerged from the earth? Because this is something coming from our future. And why has this voice come forth from it? Then the Buddha told Bodhisattva Mahapratibhana, he didn't even wait for him to ask three times, the Tathagata is in this jeweled stupa. In the remote past, immeasurable, incalculable thousands of myriads of kodas of worlds away, in the east there was a land called Ratnavisuddha. In that land there was a Buddha called Prabhutaratna. When this Buddha was practicing the Bodhisattva path in his previous lives, he made a great vow. Now, that's an interesting word, saying. And I want to talk about vow for just a moment, because I had every now and again I get an email saying, where'd you take your vows, Sifu? Sylvain Chamberlain, where did you take your vows? It's kind of a meaningless question, but okay. It's a samsara question, but I'll answer them. So I recently answered it. You'll see it in the comments. But the first thing I said is, as a practical matter, which is what that question is about, each time you savor and meaningfully chant, sing the Daimoku, you are taking your vows. This is why I say, if you're a dedicated student of this Buddhism, Lotus Sutra Buddhism, you are a monk. Period. Nichiren said the essential practice is chanting the Daimoku. Even if you only chanted once a year. Now, don't reduce your practice to that, of course. We want to get to our Buddhahood much faster than that. But we instantiate our Buddhahood in each Daimoku. Is that not the vow? You can put a lot of words around it, say it in a lot of different ways. But again, the important component, as Nichiren also says, is conviction. Have steadfast resolve. Know what you're doing. Don't just play at it. I'm saying the words, can I belong to the club now? Don't know. When you sincerely, I want to meet my Buddha. I want it now. I want it happening in my mind this very moment. Namu myoho renge kyo. You just took your vows. That's what the practice is all about. So don't be confused that the vow or some special spell or magic words or anointment from someone else. See, that's authoritarian thinking, and that's not Buddhism at all. Although it's rampant in our world today, isn't it? So this voice coming from this apparition of a jeweled stupa from the earth, from the future, speaks to us and takes its vow. If I become a Buddha, after my parinirvana, if the Lotus Sutra is being taught anywhere in all the lands of the 10 directions, my stupa shall appear there so that this sutra may be heard, and in order that I may bear testimony to it and praise it with the word splendid. And here's a key component. Remember, he introduced this while the Buddha that's speaking, the Buddha-ness speaking out of this jewel stupa, was practicing the Bodhisattva path, just as you and I are. That's why it starts out as, if I become a Buddha. After the Buddha had perfected the path and immediately before his parinirvana, he addressed the monks among the great assembly of devas and humans, saying, "After my parinirvana, anyone who wishes to pay me homage should build a great stupa." Oh man, Nietzsche must have read that and build a great stupa. How do I build a great stupa that everyone universally can access, can get to? It has to be portable. It has to be easily attained. CafePress.com/Gohanzon. Right? They should build a great stupa. What are your qualifications? Just get it. No, nothing or no one should stand in your way. Build your great stupa. It's so easy today. You can just purchase a butsudan, purchase a great mandala, Nichiren inscribed mandala. No Tom or Harry or Nikonen or whatever. Not their names and their date of birth or their whatever. Just Nichiren's teaching of what? The Lotus Sutra. Nothing should get in your way of that. It's a direct line to Buddha. Why would you want anything else on this mandala? It's a perfect reflector of your Buddha-ness, not somebody else's. Nichiren signed it to identify his clear path to this very chapter. He built the stupa and shares it with all of us. If there is anyone teaching the Lotus Sutra anywhere in the worlds of the Ten Directions, this Buddha makes a jeweled stupa emerge out of the ground in that place through his transcendent powers and the power of his vow. He is in the stupa, giving praise with the words, "Splendid, splendid, O Mahapratibhana. The Tathagata Prabhutarana has now emerged from the earth within his stupa so that he may hear the Lotus Sutra and give praise with the words, "Splendid, splendid." In other words, once this stupa is erected, that you have erected it as an altar, you can hear. Remember, hearing in Buddhism isn't just simply hearing noises, that skanda of sensations, but understanding, perceiving, receiving the words of Buddha-ness, the experience of Buddha-ness with our Gohanzon mind. The stupa opens that mind, that portal. At that time, Bodhisattva Mahaprabhana spoke to the Buddha through the Tathagata's transcendent powers, saying, really this transcendent thing all the time, from the experience to the samsaric experience to the Buddha experience. O Bhagavat, we all want to see this Buddha's form. It gives it away right there. Because the Buddha they're hearing and the Buddha they're perceiving through this jeweled stupa has no form. It's not samsaric. It's an enlightenment, right? So how the hell are they going to pull that off? Again, about that transcendent thing. The Buddha answered Bodhisattva Mahasattva Mahapratibhana, saying, "This Buddha, Prabhutaratna, made a great vow," there it is again, "saying, whenever my jeweled stupa appears in the presence of a Buddha in order to hear the Lotus Sutra, if that Buddha wants to show my form to the fourfold assembly, he should gather into one place all his mentally created forms that are teaching the Dharma in the worlds of the Ten Directions, and after that, my form will appear. He's talking about how to be a good bodhisattva. My Buddha, this Buddha-ness that we'll call mine because we're in samsara, this Buddha-ness that you hear calling you will manifest when you gather others to enjoin you in the pursuit of Buddha-ness. Perfect mirror. Nichiren must have been crawling out of his skin when he got this, right? Mahapratibhana, I shall now gather all my mentally created forms who are teaching the Dharma in the worlds of the 10 directions. Mahapratibhana spoke to the Buddha, saying, O Bhagavat, we also strongly wish to see the Bhagavat's mentally created forms to honor and pay homage to them. God damn this this samsaric obsession. Why do you need to see a man or a woman or a rock talk to you? Get the message. Why does the thing make it more real? Oh, this is tough, right? Then the Buddha, I bet you can guess what's going to happen next. The Buddha, because the words aren't switching the light on. They're just, you need to hear the click, I guess. So then the Buddha emitted a ray of light from the tuft of white hair between his eyebrows, and they immediately saw the Buddhas in 500 myriads of kotas of nayutas of lands in the eastern direction, equal in number to the sands of the Ganges River. Hello. Oh. Oh, stubborn minds. In these lands, the soil was of crystal and adorned with treasure trees and jeweled garments. The lands were full of innumerable thousands of myriads of kotas of bodhisattvas. Jeweled drapes were hung everywhere and were covered with jeweled nets. All the Buddhas in these lands were teaching the Dharma in most harmonious voices. They also saw immeasurable thousands of myriads of kotas of bodhisattvas filling the lands and teaching the Dharma to sentient beings. Click. The other directions to the south, north, west, the four intermediate directions, and the upper and lower regions were also illuminated by the ray of light emitted from the tuft of white hair between the Buddha's eyebrows, and they were also exactly like this. Enlightenment is enlightenment. It's Buddha-ness. And it originates in our own minds. But we live in an incredibly attached, thingifying period of human sentience, yeah? Everything's about money, possessions, material. Even our sciences can't let go of the word particle when describing forms of energy. Material, material, material. What do you think is making that material? E equals mc squared. Energy is equivalent to mass and speed. Momentum. We already know this. Then all the Buddhas in the 10 directions each addressed the assembly of bodhisattvas, saying, see, now the assembly is all bodhisattvas. O sons of virtuous family, we will now go to the place where Shakyamuni is in the Saha world and pay homage to the jeweled stupa of the Tathagata Prabhutaratna. He's making that division clear, isn't he? Shakyamuni, the man, is in the Saha world, this samsaric experience of reality. Let's take that physical nomenclature. And now with this stupa, this amazingly glorious, precious stupa, we will pay homage, we will dedicate our lives to Buddha-ness, this Tathagata, an experience of. At that time, the Saha world was immediately purified. The earth was of lapis lazuli, adorned. In other words, everything is precious. See, thingifying in samsara places values simply by possessing it, whether it's in your mind or in physical material form, and places different levels of importance on everything. But when you open your Buddha-ness, there's not a single grain of sand, as many as are in the Ganges River, okay, that isn't amazing, because it's not a thing, it's happening. That process supersedes any permanentizing that we do, because that's not it. Remember, it's empty. Everything that we perceive, that we turn into a thing, we've degraded it in a way, because we don't recognize what we do recognize with our Buddha-ness is that it's a process. It's happening. And we're part of the same process. And it's all happening moment to moment to moment to moment. That's fascinating. That's utterly amazing. So everything is precious. Value becomes an irrelevant concept. Can you see the world that way? Oops, lost my place. Sorry. At that time, the Saha world was immediately purified. The earth was of lapis lazuli, adorned with jeweled trains, roads laid out like a chessboard and bordered with golden cords. And there were no villages, towns, cities, oceans, rivers, mountains, streams, forests, or groves. Things. Very precious incense was burning. Mandarava flowers were spread everywhere on the earth. And it was covered with jeweled nets and drapes from which jeweled bells hung. All the accoutrements of celebration of the time of in India, right? With the exception of this assembly, the devas and human beings were all moved to other lands. Then the Buddhas each took one great bodhisattva as an attendant and arrived under a jeweled tree in the Saha world. Each jewel tree was 500 yohanas in height and adorned with branches, leaves, blossoms, and fruits in their proper turn. Under all these jewel trees were lion seats, 5 yohanas in height and adorned with great jewels. The Buddhas sat cross-legged on these seats. They sat one after the other in this way, filling the great manifold cosmos. Yet the separate forms of Shakyamuni Buddha of even one direction had not arrived yet. So this is the propagation, right? Each of us arrives with our own Buddha. Where are we time-wise? It's getting long. Okay. At that time, Shakyamuni Buddha, wanting to be able to receive all of his mentally created forms, transformed and purified 200 myriads of kodas of nayutas of lands in each of the world's systems, right? Because this is the cosmos we're talking about. In the 8 directions, there were no hells or 100 ghosts or animals or asuras. And all of the devas and humans were moved to other lands. This is a complete transmigration of our minds. And with that, I'm going to pause here and we'll pick this up in the next video. In these transformed lands, the earth was made of lapis lazuli, and we'll get into it. What do you think? What do you think of this? What do you think was going through Nietzsche's mind as he read and reread and reread this Lotus Sutra and came upon this chapter? Right? What's that guy's name, that director Cameron? I forget his first name. Did Nietzsche not see the visual messaging here? Of course, Nietzsche was greatly moved by the entire sutra, but there's a couple of chapters that he spends some time talking about or referencing quite consistently, and one can see why. I mean, after the previous 10 chapters that we've read, all about, hey, pay attention, hey, pay attention, hey, you need to think more. You can do this. You can do this. You will in the future become all the predictions and all that. And then he comes up with this. Here it is. Boom. What an incredible, incredible chapter, teaching. I hope you enjoyed it. At least my enthusiasm for it, because I can't read this chapter without just being so excited. It makes me want to chant and be thankful, grateful, just to have the opportunity to have these tools at our disposal and be able to manifest this amazing experience of life. Namo Myoden Geikyo, friends. Take care of your health. Be kind to yourself. Savor your practice. Stay strong. And we will continue this amazing skillful means story in the next. Bye for now.